This is the 300th episode of the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. I am your host. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, a podcast dude, and an all-around functional nerd who doesn't like bagels. And guess what? We made it to 300. 300 episodes, which is awesome. Who else made it to 300 episodes? Well, of course, The Simpsons did it. I wanted to say that in an Anelio voice because he used to say that a lot. Simpsons did it. This Old House made it to 300 episodes. CSI made it to 300 episodes. And then like 400. And now I think they're on life support trying to do like 750 or something. I don't know. Will Sasso's 10-minute podcast did it. They hit 300. And ER hit 300. So lots of great company out there hitting 300 episodes. And if my Google Foo were any better, I could pull up a lot more than that. I have asked a bunch of people to come on tonight and talk. These are folks who have been with us almost from the beginning, at least DiNardo has, and I think Jeff, maybe Paul, I don't remember. Sarah came on later, Gail came on later. But anyway, let's go down the list and say hello to folks. Sarah, why don't you say hello?
Hi, I'm Sarah. I run reviews out of bookrunblues.net, and once my life is under control again, I will start up my Special Needs and Strange Worlds column on SF Signal.
Awesome. Yeah, do you get when you don't do that, do you get little text messages and emails asking you where they are like I do?
No, unfortunately, I don't think anyone's noticed. So
I know.
Oh well.
Oh, people notice, trust me. People notice. That other voice you heard was Jeff Patterson. Jeff, say hey.
Hey, Jeff Patterson. I'm on Twitter as JeffPatterson11. I am one of the three hosts of the Three Horsemen podcast, one of the SF Signal family of podcasts.
Also known as SF Signal After Dark.
Yes. Just had an episode go up with Joe Monti, and we've spent the summer talking to publishers and art editors and all kinds of fun stuff.
Do you know what my connection to Joe Monti is?
What?
Joe Monti was almost my agent.
So then don't have a connection to Joe Monti.
No, we chatted quite a bit. It was a very good learning experience for me chatting with an agent. But that and then he went off and started doing publishing, so that I never got to like complete that deal and make him my agent. But I was close. I was close to closing the deal, Jeff.
I believe.
Coffee is for closers.
Mm-hmm. Next up we have Gail.
Hello. Gail Carriger. I'm an author. I write steampunk comedy manners. I'm here all the time.
You are, and we appreciate that. And you, last time you were here, you were telling us about all the other podcasts that you listen to, Breaking My Heart, but that's okay.
I know. Okay. I'm a podcast addict. What can I do? I just came back from a podcast festival in L.A.
Wow.
Because that's what I do for fun.
No one goes to L.A. for fun.
I know, it's crazy. Well, there was business as well, but the real reason was the festival.
Gotcha. Now, people do go to Anaheim for fun. And Valencia. Do you know why? Because Disneyland is in Anaheim, and Magic Mountain and Knott's Berry Farm are in Valencia.
No,
unacceptable.
No. Knott's Berry Farm is not in Valencia. Knott's Berry Farm is in Anaheim.
No, it's right up the road.
It's right by Disneyland.
No, there's the one where it's right up the road as you're going up the mountain.
That's a different Knott's Berry Farm than the Knott's Berry Farm amusement park's right by Disneyland.
There's one right there, too. Just Google map it, I promise you. Anyway, thanks, Gail. Thanks for coming on.
I object to being coupled with Disneyland, but if you must, let's proceed.
Did you see someone put together a plan for how to lay siege to the castle at Disneyland? They did. As if it was, you know, ancient times and you had to storm the castle. Nothing? Okay. Paul.
First you buy a ticket. And...
Paul, say hello.
This is Paul Weimer. Well, it's the 300th episode. Uh-huh. Hi, I'm Paul Weimer, Prince Justin on Twitter, and I've been on the SS Signal podcast since, well, we'll talk about that in a while. I've been on the podcast quite a long time. Mm-hmm. So hi, everyone.
Yeah, and you're on SS Signal Lite, which is Skippy and Fanti.
Don't let Sean hear you say that. he will end you.
That's okay. He doesn't listen.
I'm also frequently on SFF Audio, and I pop up on all sorts of other podcasts. I even was the first guest ever on the Three Horsemen.
Wow,
that's true. He was.
That's pretty cool.
And Sarah was shortly thereafter, I believe.
Was I that early?
Yeah,
I think you were number two.
Have you had Gail on yet?
Oh.
I think Fred's working on her.
Oh, is he?
I believe he is. I thought he was.
I'm terrible at this sort of thing.
Well, it's just funny because it's one gigantic big podcast family, really, that all owe, you know, all their successes, of course, to me. So,
absolutely, Patrick. No doubt about it.
I'm going to give you credit when credit's due when it's my turn.
You're like the Lorne Michaels of podcasting.
I know, right? So that was the voice of John DiNardo.
Hi, folks. John DiNardo here. I run SF Signal, and I have a weekly column at Kirkus Reviews.
I have a twice-monthly column at Kirkus Reviews. Is that the way it works, or is it bi-monthly?
Bi-weekly, right? Every 2 weeks?
So wouldn't bi-weekly mean twice every week?
No.
No.
Semi-weekly.
This is a question that I believe was tackled by a statistical British podcast.
Really?
And it can actually mean both things. I can't remember if it was like Infinite Monkey Cage or something else, but yeah.
Huh.
So don't use the term bi-weekly because everybody's confused by it.
In the world of comic book indicias, bi-monthly was every 2 months. Semi-monthly was twice a month.
Mm.
That's only growing up with comics, that was how I knew.
Is that like regular chocolate chips versus semi-sweet?
Say again?
Is that like regular chocolate chips versus semi-sweet?
I honestly don't know.
What's the trend with the tea that you buy in the store that Gail hates that is cold and it's in the bottle and it says a tad sweet? That's weird. It's like all the tea companies that used to say we have real tea are now offering quote unquote the real tea. It's like before it wasn't real tea and now it is. I don't get that either. That's kind of weird.
I'm just offended by the fact that they've broadened the spectrum of flavors on bottled teas. That really annoys me.
I guess so. John, we haven't talked to you in a really long time. What have you been doing?
This and that, blogging, you know, getting stuff all constructed behind the scenes, you know.
Paul,
keeping busy.
Paul, do you remember the singing group The Turtles?
I remember The Turtles.
So we don't really talk about what we do for the most part, like the normal people. Obviously Gail talks about being a writer and stuff, but we don't really talk about what we do outside of the podcast, like what's our day job. For example, I'm a digital marketing specialist. John and Jeff are actually the sons of the guys from The Turtles, and they tour doing shows, singing the songs of The Turtles.
I can imagine them singing Happy Together. I can hear it in my brain now. You've earwormed me.
It's amazing. There's a lot of things you learn doing 300 episodes of a podcast. John, have you learned anything podcasting with me?
With you?
Yes.
No, you know what? Sean Duke has taught me a few things, though.
Have you learned, John, not to sing while I'm recording?
Yes, I kind of have.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yes, sir, a wise one. for people who don't realize, Patrick has some audio blackmail waiting in the wings should I ever cross his path in an unfortunate manner or one that he doesn't prefer.
And isn't it amazing that that's never made it onto the last bit at the end of the podcast?
Yes. Yes. Oh, you're not going to, are you? For 300? That would be so rude.
I don't know. I don't know.
But you see, Patrick, but you see, Patrick, this is the main difference between you and I. I know I can't sing, and hence I don't. Whereas you accept that you can't sing and share it with us anyway.
So it's like the doodles. It's like the Wednesday doodles.
Precisely.
Yeah. I just put it out
there. You have improved, though. I must say, you have improved.
It's actually one of those things where if I take my time, it can be a better doodle. If I'm in a hurry, you get what you get every Wednesday.
Yeah, that's it with me, too.
Speaking of comic books, because Jeff brought them up, did you know that The Amazing Spider-Man number 300 was published by Marvel Comics in May of 1988 and featured the reveal of who Venom was?
Yep, I remember that.
I have that issue. It's over there in the corner.
It was awful. That was an awful storyline.
Yeah, that was McFarlane.
Yeah, well.
That was McFarlane. So, we have five topics that we can talk about tonight. Is anybody, like, super chomping at the bit to talk about something?
Silence.
Define super chomping at the bit. You give us these vague measurements that are difficult to quantify.
Yes, that's actually why Fred's not here. So...
Wow.
Because he doesn't like that, the vagueness of it. So, let's just look at the topic. So, does anybody want to talk about your favorite science fiction and fantasy memory of all time?
Yep.
Paul. Yep. Paul, go.
Okay. That would be 2014 going to my first ever Worldcon, as a nominee, mm-hmm. and being in those seats watching as people were winning Hugo Awards. Not me, but just to see my name up there as a nominee with the Skippy and Finney show.
So that was in London.
That was in London.
So
when you didn't go to.
So despite warm beer and no sweet tea, that is your favorite moment.
Even with the warm beer and no sweet tea, yes, going to Worldcon, meeting lots of people first time, like Gail. Hi, Gail. It was a thrill. I mean, once I was there, I regretted not having gone to previous Worldcons.
And then you didn't go this year.
I didn't go this year because I'm going in 2 months as of this recording to Rome, so that's where my money's going. I couldn't afford a trip to Spokane and to Rome, buddy.
Obviously, you don't know anything about going deep into debt.
I know way too much about going deep into debt, which is why I'm not trying to finance a Spokane and to Rome. Thank you very much.
So that's your favorite moment of all science fiction and fantasy.
I've got to say,
it's a good moment. Don't get me wrong.
Being a Hugo nominee, going to Worldcon, meeting tons of people. Yeah, I mean, if you want to give me a backup, I'll give you a backup one. That was on the, not SS Signal Light, the On the Skipping and Finish show, getting to interview and talk with one of my genre heroes, Kim Stanley Robinson.
Mm.
That was a lot of fun.
At the Worldcon that you went to, did you go to the Hugo Losers Party?
I did go to the Hugo Losers Party. I didn't stay that long because my traveling companion wasn't feeling well, so I didn't stay long enough to actually meet George.
I've been to two at least, and I never got the courage to walk up and say hello to him. So I'm right there with you. I haven't got to meet him yet either.
Hopefully one day I can.
Very briefly, but I did. I was at the one of the Hugo parties in at ShyCon in 2012.
Uh-huh. I was with you.
Yeah, that was great.
But I didn't meet him. You didn't introduce me.
Well, you weren't there.
Thanks.
You know, it was in the crowded room, right? You turn around to you know, head off somewhere else, and then I turn around and boom, there's George R. R. Martin without his entourage, right? So I introduced myself, thanked him for, you know, because he's participated in some mind melds in the past, which I was very grateful, and that was that. Just a quick meeting.
Another thing that I have learned in 300 episodes of a podcast: if George R. R. Martin invites you to a wedding, say no.
I read what you did there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. So Gail, were you the other one that's piped up that you wanted to say something?
Yeah, oddly similar, actually. Mine was the 2004 Boston Worldcon, which was my first Worldcon, and that's probably my favorite memory. I'm sure I have others from earlier in time when I was a little wee thing, but I guess sort of in the sphere of fandom, that's my favorite memory. It was just a great Worldcon.
It had all
the things you want from one. The hotel was attached to the convention center, so you didn't have to walk anywhere. The parties were right there. Everything was right there. The con suite was epic. There was an amazing tiny restaurant across the street that had the best clam chowder in the entire universe.
I was going to ask you if you could say chowder.
Chowder.
Wait a minute. It was Boston, though, right?
It was Boston.
So is that clam chowder that was white instead of the good and proper red, as is right and proper in the universe.
None of that Manhattan nonsense, no.
Do I need to add chowder to the list of things we don't talk about?
When I'm on the podcast, it's possible.
I actually happen to like both, I know. Well, this one was the white one. I also got to meet both Tamara Pierce and Terry Pratchett, who are like two of my heroes author-wise. So nice. that was very exciting convention for me.
So would you say that the Boston Worldcon was wicked smart?
Well, that movie wasn't out yet, I don't think. So probably not.
I hate to break it to both you and Paul. I actually don't like clam chowder.
It's all right. Not everybody can have taste, Patrick. Especially not you.
He didn't grow up near the coast, so he never got good clams. So
correct. I was landlocked. I was in the central San Joaquin Valley for most of my young life. And when I went to Boston for the first time, which for me, my first ever trip to Boston was 2 years ago. It had nothing to do with genre. It was for a work thing. And I'm sitting there in the North End, which is a big deal, right? And that's where they've got a lot of these little restaurants. Very cool, very eclectic, and tons of fresh food and seafood and everything. I said, well, I can't come to Boston and be in this area and not try clam chowder here, right? Because if you're going to try it anywhere, that's the place to try it. I didn't like it.
You should have gone with lobster roll instead, which Boston actually does well. There's no such thing as a good lobster roll in New York City. If you want lobster roll, you go to Boston.
It's like pizza. Gotcha. Okay.
to mirror both of them, the first thing I had written on the top of my list was my first Worldcon, which was 1980 in Boston.
Wow. So. Yeah, we forget that you're like Waldorf and...
Yeah.
You're pretty old.
It was funny because I had gone to Boston quite a bit in my high school years because that's where all the really good punk clubs were. And so I go to Boston for Worldcon. And I had been to like some smaller cons and some stuff at the Science Museum and libraries and stuff like this. But I walk into Worldcon and it's thousands of people. And I was like, I stayed at a hotel. I think it was the Copley Plaza, the two of the smaller hotels with Copley in the name. And that hotel closed its doors between 1 a.m. and 6 a.m. and locked them. You could not get into the hotel. And I ended up getting back to the hotel too late and spent my first night at Worldcon walking around the Christian Science Center there, their big Art Deco Vatican that they have right in the middle of Boston there, with a girl dressed as Princess Leia and a guy dressed as the blonde dude from ElfQuest. Cutter, is that his name? And it was me wandering around with the two of them in Boston in the middle of the night.
Wow.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was. It was a very surreal experience. I slept through most of the next day.
Well, of course, as you do. So I'm curious, Paul, would you support my bid for a rules change to the Worldcon rules, which is if you are Hugo nominated, they're not legally allowed to put you in a panel before noon on Sunday?
Having been on a panel in Worldcon relatively early in the morning, yes, I absolutely agree with this idea.
That's funny. Sarah, did you have a favorite moment you wanted to talk about?
Well, I don't have anything that cool that's happened. I don't really go to conventions often. I don't really meet people often. I've been, mired in my own health stuff. So I'm not cool like that. So in the realm of competing with your stories, no, I've got nothing.
But it doesn't have to be in the... I mean, it's personal. Yeah. It's a personal thing, Sarah.
Yeah.
Well, it could be when you got all the books from Chuck. It could be whatever.
That was really cool. I have to admit, every year for Christmas, I write an author that I really like, and I ask them if I can pay to have them send me an autographed book. So last year it was Chuck Wendig, And I asked him, and he said, yeah, sure, I'll send you stuff. And I was just expecting, like, one book. And he sent me a box full of, I think it was almost everything he's ever published, personally signed, and it was way cool. So that made me happy.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty thrilling.
John, how about you? Is it any one particular book review that you wrote?
Let's go with no on that one. I was, you know, when you had passed this subject matter around, I was like, well, you know, the thing I like most about it is, or you know, my favorite memory, it's kind of not one, but like a bunch of memories of, you know, interacting with people, right? Meeting all these wonderful people that are in the community. And, you know, if I had to distill it down, I'd pick the traditional one, which we had coordinated our answers, my first Worldcon, which was ShyCon 2012 again.
That's interesting. So yeah. You mean the Worldcon that I basically berated you into going to?
Yeah, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
So that was my first Worldcon, and of course, winning a Hugo Award was just, you know, mind shattering. I was just blown away by that. If you couldn't tell by my awesomely delivered speech, you know that feeling you get when you watch the Star Wars Christmas special on YouTube. Yeah, that's kind of the feeling you get when you watch the recording of my speech that night. It was terrible, but the whole weekend was just phenomenal. It was just meeting all these people, right? We met Patrick. You were with me when we met with Jay Lake, right? And mm-hmm. and he kind of took us under his wing because it was our first Worldcon, and he had
just found out about the cancer coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was that interview you did with them, which was very, very emotional, I guess, the way to say that. Very good interview. It was, you know, meeting Robert Silverberg, right? And the story behind that, of course, is while I was talking to Robert Silverberg, Patrick is profanity texting me, you know, just constantly. While I'm talking to Silverberg, my phone just won't stop going off, and so, you know, I kind of was, you know, there were some other folks there. He talked to someone else. I'd sneak at my phone and sneak a look at my phone, and there's Patrick. And yeah, that was a fun memory. Meeting George R. R. Martin, that was fun, right? I got to see Brenda Cooper, who's always a hoot, Ellen Datlow, just all these, just so many folks that are just like such awesome people, you know, that you meet online, right, through emails and interviews, or you know, you feel like you get to know them by reading their books somehow. And then you finally meet them, and then it's like, it's just amazing. It's like, this is just, you know, it's just very memorable experiences, right? It's just, you know, meeting folks was that. So, but if I had to distill it down into one, it's my first Worldcon.
That I made you go to.
Go ahead.
That I made you go to.
That you made me go to. And Paul, if it makes you feel any better, when you had said my first Worldcon, I was gonna come off mute and say, you stole my answer. So the table finally turned, right? Paul got to pick something first and nobody else picked it. So there we go.
Well, and we also got to do that really cool meetup.
Oh, the meetup. Oh my gosh, the meetup. Yeah, of course. Oh, the meetup. Right. So and that was, Patrick, that was, I think, your idea, right? It was, uh-huh. It was the, you know, let's get together and meet up with some authors and fans. And we had like all these people come out. You know, we got some pizza. We sat in the, I guess it was like a food court area in the mall attached to the hotel.
You're mixing them up. The first meetup we did was at a cafe in downtown Chicago outside of the convention center.
I am mixing them up. Yeah. I'm mixing up the 2012 and the 2013. In 2012, it was some restaurant or whatever.
Yeah, it was a little cafe up the street.
Right. Violet Milan showed up. I might be mispronouncing her name. Emma Newman showed up, and that was fun.
Laura Resnick was there.
Resnick.
There's just a ton of people.
Michael Jordan was there.
Yeah. And Michael Jordan was not doing any, like, commercials for Hanes.
Different Michael Jordan. Different Michael Jordan. You know that. Silly boy. Yeah. So it was just a lot of fun, is meeting out, meeting some folks. And that was where I met John Wiswell, one of our I guess longtime readers, who struck me as just such an eager fan, right? It's like that, you know, like when you're a fan and you're really excited about just the genre and stuff, he like epitomizes that for me. He's like this just super eager fan, loves genre. And so it was fun meeting him as well. So yeah, it's just a great time at conventions. I highly recommend you go.
And the next year that you're thinking of, when we had meetup, we also did an SF Signal group meetup, like all the people who have contributed to SF Signal who happened to be at the con.
Right.
Yep. I was there.
And that was huge because we were all at a Denny's trying to eat breakfast together. I remember thinking quite clearly, if a meteor struck this Denny's right now, tidbits wouldn't go out tomorrow.
Yeah, there'd be who'd do tidbits?
All I remember about that is the fact that Matthew Sanborn Smith kept twisting the knife with the waitress.
Speaking of Matthew Sanborn Smith, you know, I'm wondering, 300. Right? That's like the number. That's what I'm kind of playing with here tonight. 300 one-liners is your average Beware the Hairy Mango episode.
Oh, I know, right? Those things, that's like a frenetically paced... I can't imagine how that's just like not so hugely pop and more popular than it is. It's right. Just so... It's so amazingly fun to listen to. It's kind of like absurdist fiction, but it's like hysterical. If you've ever seen like Woody Allen's Love and Death... Mm-hmm. Which is kind of like a 90-minute monologue is really what it is, right? There's a loose story around it. But it's just like a whole bunch of a stream of one-liners. And Beware the Hairy Mango is a podcast that's just like that. It's so awesome to listen to.
It is. I almost feel like we should all go listen to it right now.
I think we've all heard enough of that. Hello, my scientific anomalies. This is Matthew Sanborn Smith from the podcast home of the Hirsute Fruit Beware the Hairy Mango. You know, the sound of thousands of you hitting the forward button at the same time sounds like hail on a steel roof. But Patrick demanded I cough up my favorite science fiction memories to you, and through the wonders of a company that claimed they could remember it for me retail, I'm able to do something roughly approximating that. My fondest science fiction memories carry me back to the holidays. Sometimes my mom and dad, I say that because they were only my mom and dad sometimes. Being Githanian, they were sometimes my mom, sometimes my dad's, but mostly neither. Anyway, they'd go out of their way to make a wonderful generic holiday that felt remarkably like Christmas Eve dinner. Money was tight this one season. Mom had started pouring a second foundation, but all Dad could see was a second mortgage. He was a demolished man that holiday, claiming that he had acquired an Andromeda strain at work, which we later found out was what he called a hernia. He spent his days at home on Mercer's empathy box getting his rocks off. Whenever we dragged him away from it, he looked like he had won the lottery. Mom was home for winter mute break from her teaching gig at Ludovico Tech. Meals had always been problematic for us. Our roadside picnics were often plagued by screwflies and cartographer wasps. Dinners throughout the year were rather monotonous, as Dad made his and her living as a fisher person, and it was driving him and her a little crazy. Every night after I said the other graces, Dad would look his dinner in the eye and say, "Thou art cod." But that generic holiday eve, it was double plus food. My sister had outdone herself with the Arakeen sand ham, which was normally too spicy for me. In the past, I'd preferred the Gaty Prime Jive turkey, but she'd discovered the best-selling cookbook to serve ham, and it was far more tender than the previous year's stainless steel rat. It was the first year I sliced the main dead animal with an electric knife, but our real knife had died of blister rust a few months earlier, and we were trying to save face. The ham was glazed with honey from our neighbor Mr. Hellstrom's hive, and with a plate of gravy-covered mashed triffid, I felt like I had died and gone to the lathe of heaven. The tragedy of it was that for all her work, my sister couldn't enjoy her creation. She was restricted to an IV after a bad breakup with her boyfriend Charlie X. The doctor said she had no mouth and she must eat. I'm still not sure why we had to pay a doctor to tell us that. Our generic religion, which bore some similarities to Catholicism, required that we go to midnight mass at 6 o'clock that evening because it took so long for Brother Francis Girard to recite the 9 billion names of God. You'd think an all-powerful being could just make a decision. One name of God and we'd have been out of there in time to catch family ties. The next morning we learned that my parents had blown what was left of our savings on jewelry. Dad bought Mom a platinum ring world, I think he was hoping to get lucky, and Mom bought him a golden torque, which the fire marshal stated in the press release the next day was the worst possible gift to get a latent creative. I was thrilled to get a super toy, though not so thrilled the following autumn when I learned that the warranty was only good through September 22nd. My sister received a helix of semi-precious stones, which would have brought a smile to her face, except, well, you know, man, she gave me the heechie-jeebies. Well, that's all the memories I could afford today. Good night. Oh yeah, happy SF episode or whatever.
So my favorite memory of SFNF is basically everything that's happened since we started this podcast. Because ever since John said yes, I've always wanted to have a podcast associated with sfsignal.com, tons of awesome things have happened from meeting all of you and everybody else who's ever been on the podcast to winning Hugo Awards and getting to go to cons and all that. It all happened, and it's all tied to this. So that's my favorite memory. I want to throw out there that Mad Magazine published their 300th issue. It was called The Sexiest Schmuck Alive in January of 1991. And it had DiNardo on the cover, so that was kind of funny. The second topic I threw out there was anything at all in genre related to the number 300. Jeff, do you have anything?
But that's probably the number of books per trip that I got rid of when I moved to Virginia.
I think it's the number of books that Fred has currently sitting on his to-be-read pile.
I think that's
it's, it's way more than that.
It's the number of stories Ken Liu wrote since we started recording.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I don't think he I don't think he gets that joke, because I've tried to use it with him actually in person, and he just stares at me.
We were co-guests of honors at ArmadilloCon this year, and for some reason, I just failed to bring that up with him about that whole running gag thing.
Yeah. So what was cool about that is I actually got to write John's bio for the program. And, yes. And rather than write a real bio, I just made a bunch of stuff up. And I think it worked out pretty well.
You should put that online.
Yeah, we should put that online. It, sure. And it was also funny because the con sent me a copy, and John also sent me a copy of it. And I got the con copy first, and I didn't know that he was sending me a copy. And I'm like, hey, I got a copy of this from the con. And he's like, oh, I just put one in the mail to you.
Yeah, the day after I mailed it.
And I was like, oh, that's okay. Did you sign it? And he's like, no. Epic fail, John. Epic fail. Gail, do you have anything in genre related to the number 300?
Only my profound, utter, and complete horror and dislike of the movie and the graphic novel.
I'm sorry for making that joke then, Gail.
And actually, what is funny about that movie, this is a little known fact.
No, there's nothing funny about it.
No, this is a behind-the-scenes fact about the movie. It cost them $65 million to green screen all those abs on those guys.
I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it.
Photoshop.
It's a blight on my universe.
Understood. Sarah, how about you?
I got nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
How about this? Science Fiction World released their 300th issue in May of 2011.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I would have thought it was earlier than that.
Mm-mm. Not according to Google. John, you got anything else on 300?
Just the number of podcasts we've done. I don't think people out there realize how much work actually goes into it. It's a lot of work that folks don't see just by listening, or may not realize just by listening. So, you know, what Patrick does is he has to organize all these podcasts. He has to organize panels. He has to, you know, reach out to authors. He has to, you know, engage the authors, ask interesting questions, which he's been doing for 300 episodes. So my hat's off to you, Patrick, for reaching 300.
Mm-hmm. And he also has to maintain that excellent collection of 80s theme songs.
Not to mention the drive where he keeps all his blackmail audio.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was just listening to the disco version of the Star Wars theme song.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
In the local grocery store, they had it going over the speakers. As I'm walking through the store, I'm going, you know, it's like in my head, I'm going, na, 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 na. I'm like, wow, why is the Star Wars theme stuck in my, wait a minute, what the hell is that? And that's what it was. It was the disco version.
Are you aware of, like, how many famous musicians are actually on that album? Mm-mm. That's like almost.
Is it over 300?
It's like almost all of Paul Schaefer's band is on that, I think.
Well, isn't Paul Schaefer's band on basically everything? They're the Blues Brothers. They're the Saturday Night Live band. They're the David Letterman band.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what? Duck Dunn? Tommy Malone? Who else?
I don't know their name.
Jeff, you failed.
I Don't know my TV band trivia. Sorry.
So last night, Jeff, I actually did an interview with Jason Heller where he was talking about prog rock. And he went straight to Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a little too easy.
What do you mean too easy?
Yeah.
It's happen to like Yes.
It's low-hanging fruit, though.
It's the go-to progressive rock band.
It's like people saying, oh, yeah, my favorite song is Tom Sawyer.
Okay, I can see your point, but there are genuine prog rock fans who genuinely put Yes at the top of their list.
Okay, Paul, you got anything about 300?
I've consumed about 300 books since the start of January 2013. Most of those genre books. Also, Kim Stanley Robinson's 2312 was set 300 years after the novel's publication in 2012.
Nice. When you said you had consumed 300 books since January, and then you kind of paused.
No, January 2013.
I know, and then you paused. I was like, holy crap, has he finally beaten Sarah?
No.
When he says consumed, he actually means eaten. It's the only way he can get through so many books. Oh, I'm kidding. I kid.
John wishes he could get through 3 books.
Oh, my reading rate has just seriously declined.
So here's what's funny, folks. I finished The Martian, and I was so excited by the book. I really enjoyed it. I'm sure someone else is going to tell me what a terrible book it was. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I told DiNardo, you should totally read this book. He responds with a link to his book review.
Yeah, RTFB, man.
This is why I never send emails to like Paul or Sarah saying, you guys should read this book, because I know they'll send me a book review link. I thought I had a shot with John.
The one book I read in the first quarter of 2015 or whenever it was.
I heard somebody on one of my comedy podcasts, sorry, Patrick, talking about how, you know that part in Apollo 13 where they have to redo the air filter. The guys on the ground have to make a square filter fit into a round hole. Yeah. If you liked that part of that movie, you'll love The Martian.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's about right.
Well, I listened to the audiobook. And I think if I had tried to read the book like on my Kindle, which I do have the Kindle version, I think I probably would have got lost in the science. But by listening to it on the audiobook, I never got lost in it because the narrator was so good.
Who was the narrator?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that hard question. I can probably look it up here. But the thing was, he did such a good job because he really brought the character to life for me, right? So it was he's a smartass, and just like I'm a smartass, you know? And so it just struck a chord with me. I don't know.
Watch his old TV and...
Okay, why is my library not showing The Martian?
R.C. Bray is the narrator.
If you say so. Well, I guess I go to the next page, maybe?
That's what Amazon says.
I think there might have been a second version, though.
Oh, so that might not even be the right one.
I think
one.
There might be, because I just...
Oh,
I just
yeah, saw. You're right. You're absolutely right. No, R.C. Bray is listed as both. No, it's a different one. No, that's...
Oh, they changed the picture. That's why I didn't recognize it. R.C. Bray. You're right. It's R.C. Bray. So it's funny, on Audible, they used to have the book cover picture, right? Now they've changed it to Matt Damon. So I was looking for it, and it wasn't there. And I'm like, what happened? Why isn't The Martian in my... And then I started to have that panic moment. It's like, no, maybe it's gone forever. Like Fred's ebooks. All 300 of them. But no, yeah, he was just so good, and he made it for me. He made him a smartass, you know. He made that come through, and you know, it's like, I am going to do this, and then the next thing is, well, that didn't work, and I almost killed myself. And it's just the way he did it, it was just wonderful. So yeah, great book, liked it. The Drink Tank, they published their 300th issue in November of 2011. Woohoo. Good for them. Let's look at the next one. 5 SF&F things you want people to know about, and 2 of them can't be books. John.
Oh, geez. Yeah, totally wasn't ready for this. Let's see.
That's okay. You're the one taking notes.
Yeah. Am I?
To build the HTML,
So, yeah, that's
all that work, right? That goes on behind the scenes, folks.
So, yeah, but I didn't have the time because I was asked to be on a podcast. So, no. So, let's see. I've been, maybe one of the reasons I haven't been reading much lately is I've been watching more TV. So, some good sci-fi TV, maybe.
Sure.
There's lots of shows I'm unfortunately not watching, but want to. There's, I don't even know all the ones I'm not watching, but you know, some of the new shows are coming on. They aired Minority Report this week, which I see is getting some flack on the internet in some places, but I kind of liked it. The Minority Report was one of my favorite sci-fi movies. I like that, you know, there were some ethical issues around the idea of pre-crime. I like that they had the kind of these futuristic prognostications of what, I don't know, advertisements might be like in the future, that kind of stuff. And they have a bunch of that stuff like that in the show. It's hard to know if the show will maintain that after one episode, and it's on Fox, which doesn't bode well. Almost Human was another police procedural that was on that didn't last long. That held my interest for maybe three episodes before I gave up on that. Started watching Fear the Walking Dead, which is okay. Somehow I don't like it as much as The Walking Dead. I think because we kind of know where it's going to end up, and we're just kind of waiting for the characters to reach that point of realization.
Do you think at this point they're beating an undead horse?
I can't believe I laughed at you at that. That was so corny. But yeah, there you go. So what else? What else have I been watching?
I don't know. What else have you been watching? Do you watch Killjoys?
I do. I actually enjoyed Killjoys. It's that's a fun show, right? It moves fast.
Dark Matter?
That's another fun one. No, I haven't. I have that all like queued up on the DVR, but I haven't started that one yet. I'm like way behind.
Didn't you just watch like three movies?
I did. You're going to ask me what those are. Oh, you know what I saw last weekend? I saw Jason and the Argonauts.
Yeah.
Which, not my first time, obviously, but that was kind of a nice little Ray Harryhausen.
The old one?
Yeah, the Ray Harryhausen, yep. You know.
I love the skeleton scene is still one of the best animations before, ever, or since.
Yeah, you know what about that? So I'm watching that movie, and it occurs to me that Jason was kind of a dick. I mean, he went on this quest, right, to go, you know, to save his kingdom by getting this golden fleece and bringing, you know, honor back to the kingdom and all this stuff. And in order to do that, though, he had to kind of steal it from another civilization that was, you know, bringing them peace. And he just took it. What a dick. And then when he gets it, he kills the skeletons, the film just ends. They don't like show him bringing it home and bringing prosperity to the kingdom and all that stuff.
And he's even more of a dick because he cheats on his wife, who's Medea, who then goes cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs and kills their children and tries to kill Jason and goes flying off.
I don't remember this movie at all.
No, that's not in the movie.
That's the original myth.
That's the original myth. Have any of you ever read Pyramid Power by Eric Flint and David Freer?
No.
It's partially set in Chicago, so that's why we didn't read it, Patrick. It's basically an alien spacecraft lands in Chicago, sets out this weird field, and a bunch of people wind up in a created world of Greek and Egyptian myth.
I remember this. Yeah,
yeah, and Medea is one of the characters, and Medea has a much more sympathetic viewpoint in this book than I've ever seen in any sort of depiction of her, because she's totally says that Jason was a dick, and yeah.
All right.
I kind of figured Jeff would remember this one.
I'm having trouble with the plausibility of them finding an open field in Chicago.
It crushed some buildings.
Well, then that makes more sense. Okay.
Oh, yes. Speaking of Chicago, did you hear Culver's is finally opening a branch in Chicago?
Uh-uh.
Yeah, Wesley Chu is running. I heard this is relevant to my interest. I said, yes, you will like Culver's. Have you ever eaten at Culver's?
What's Culver's?
Culver's. I guess you haven't. Culver's does some of the best custard in the Midwest, although Bradley Bowyer will disagree with me on that.
What's custard?
Sigh. I'll give the Gale character. Sigh.
Well, you know what? Here's my link to New York for you, Paul. I was walking through the local grocery store, and in the freezer section, they had Carvel.
Yay! Sorry, people. Carvel is one of my
And the only other time I've ever even heard of Carvel was through Larry King.
Budgie the whale, baby.
He used to tell the story of he and his friends trying to go out at like 1 a.m. on a Friday night trying to find Carvel because that's what they wanted. That's what they were craving. It was kind of like, you know, Harold and Kumar go to White Castle, only with Larry King and his friends.
Carvel is the Dairy Queen of New York City. If you lived in New York City, you had Carvel ice cream. There was just no way around it. And it was
new
awesome.
New ones opened in Connecticut and Massachusetts. The line was hundreds of people long.
Wow.
It's got a weird addictive taste to it. I can't even say it's super great ice cream, but there's a taste to it. Just like, I gotta keep eating this. And you wind up, how did I eat a quarter of this ice cream cake? Oh, God.
John, do you remember Carvel?
Yes, absolutely. Everything Paul said.
Did you? How did you put that on your bagel?
Well, see, that's the beauty of it, is like you have the bagel as a bagel, and then you have the Carvel as a dessert.
To the bagel.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay. Paul, did you have five things?
I can come up with five things.
Go for it.
I'm looking forward to Man in the High Castle because, as Jeff Patterson can attest, and anyone who listened to SFF Audio, I'm a big fan. On SFF Audio, we've been going through the Dick Cannon of audiobooks. So mostly I've read some new, so I'm looking forward to actual series. I liked the pilot. I don't know how they're going to sustain this series, but I'm willing to give them a shot. I've been playing an old computer game, old PS3 game called Borderlands 2. This is my de-stressing game where I get to shoot lots of things on an alien planet while looking for a vault full of artifacts. It's surprisingly cathartic, and I recommend it to anybody who just wants to go around shooting aliens and people to relax.
And it was Borderlands 2?
Borderlands 2. There's also Borderlands. There's also, which I've also played. There's also Tales from the Borderlands, which I haven't played yet, or Borderlands, the pre-sequel, which I haven't played yet. But once I get through this, I'll probably go for those too, because, you know, killing alien beasties and people and having fun. Good times. I'm going to argue this is a genre and movie because this is an alternate history. It's out. It's like on video on demand, but I got to see it in the theater here. The movie Dragonblade, starring Jackie Chan, John Cusack, and Adrian Brody, which is the weirdest possible combination you could think of, a trio of actors doing a Romans versus Chinese
movie. I think I saw that trailer.
Yeah, set in the Silk Road. The history is, it says based on real events. It's bullshit. The Romans never had an army marching through the Silk Road. It's a really interesting and odd story. I mean, they get the historical deals wrong, but it's a visual spectacle, starting with Jackie Chan starting his antics and ending in a very moving, almost funeral scene at the end. It's just gorgeous to watch on the screen. So if you can see in a theater, I recommend you do so. Otherwise, it's like on video on demand and stuff, and I'm hoping it'll come out on DVD so I can pick it up, because it was gorgeous to watch. Two books. I'm currently reading Tom Toner's The Promise of the Child, which is scratching that itch I've had for transhuman SF. Tom Toner's book is filling that gap for me. I think you'd like it, Jeff. I'm really enjoying it so far. And October 6th, ladies and gentlemen, this is going to go out before October 6th, right, Patrick?
Yep.
Okay, October 6th. October 6th is Book Explosion Tuesday. There are new releases from Anne Leckie, Laura Ann Gilman, Cameron Hurley, Jamie Lee Moyer, Julia Knight, Ferret Steinmetz, Tanya Huff, and I'm probably missing a few. It's my credit card bill is going to go through the roof on the 6th of October, the day after my birthday. But there's a science fiction and fantasy book for you coming out on that day. I guarantee it.
What's Tanya Huff's new book?
Oh, crap. I don't have the title. Okay.
Sorry. I'll just look it up.
I think it's the new Confederation one.
No, it's a Valor book?
I think so. I believe it's a...
Oh, that's really exciting. That means it's the last one, isn't it? Okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
I'll be quiet now.
That's okay. Do you know the name of it yet, Paul? Did you figure it out?
Nope. No quarter.
Oh, it's a quarter,
it's a quarter
book.
It's a quarter now. But then,
suddenly I'm less excited. Never mind.
Oh, sorry. Yep.
That's still awesome.
Fantasy, not SF. Sorry.
So, here's my question, and maybe John can answer this, being a computer nerd. Patch Tuesday came about years ago, if I'm not mistaken, because of Windows. Okay. Now, it's like lots of things launch on Tuesday, not just patches. I'm wondering if there was something that, like, was Tuesday a thing before Patch Day, John?
It's New York Times reporting week correlative.
Yeah, there's books were always came out on Tuesday, DVDs always came out on whatever day, Thursday or whatever day it is, and right, that's been that way for a long time, right? Well, the books coming out on Tuesday thing has gone all over the map now with publishing changing as it is, right? But I think the major publishers still release on Tuesdays, right?
Gail? In UK, it's Thursday.
I'm always dropped Tuesdays, yes.
Interesting. But what I'm wondering is did that predate Patch Day?
Probably.
Publishing has been around longer than computers.
Not according to a lot of people. I don't think that's true. Can't possibly be right. Books are a new thing, right?
It was formalized in 2003, says Wikipedia, and if it's on the internet, it must be true.
There you go. Alrighty. Sarah, do you have five things?
I can try and think of some.
And go.
Okay. Okay. So a few years ago, I went to FantasyCon here in Salt Lake City with my daughter, and she was in a stroller, and I ran over this actor. And then I didn't know who he was, and he was drunk, and I had a bunch of grapes. And so I said, I'm really sorry I hit you. Are you okay? And he said, yes. And then I said, here's some grapes. So he ate grapes and drank beer, and we chatted for a while, and then he left, and I left. And then this lady comes up to me who I'd never met and goes, do you have any idea if you just ran over with your stroller? And I said, no. So I'm up at 4 o'clock in the morning now, and I remembered this exchange, and I decided it's time to watch a really stupid show that will keep me awake at 4 o'clock in the morning. So I look up this guy, and he's the werewolf dude on the show Lost Girl, which is a really phenomenally stupid show. But if you're up at 4 o'clock in the morning feeding an infant and you're trying not to fall asleep, you might want to check that one out. It's on Netflix, and there's like 3 seasons of it on there. And there you go.
And I think they ran like 5 or 6 seasons, to be honest with you.
Did they really?
Yeah, because it's a Canadian show that the SIFI channel buys and airs.
I don't even know. It's something else.
and I'm trying to remember the name of the werewolf dude that you're talking about.
I don't know it either.
I watched like the first season, maybe the first season and a half of that.
That's pretty bad. It's good for... I find myself so annoyed at everyone on the show that I can't fall asleep on my kit and smother. So it works. that's a good show. So
gotcha. There. Okay.
Let's see. I don't have any other non-bookish things going on. Can I move to bookish?
Sure. Okay. But only comic books.
Well, then you're screwed. You're going to have cricket sounds. So I'm taking part in, Mark Lawrence is doing this thing called the Self-Published Fantasy Blog Off. And it's really interesting. I think all of us who are participating have discovered that there's a lot more talent in the self-published arena than a lot of reviewers at least give these people credit for. Mm-hmm. So if you read books and stuff, do a search for self-published fantasy blog off. There's like, I think there were close to 300 books entered, and we've all
300
lists down to, yeah, there you go. We've culled the list down to the top 10. So now all of us are reading the top 10, and we're going to pick the best one as a collective, but it's definitely something worth checking out, I guess. I like it. It's been fun. I'm almost done reading Cold Iron, and it's really good. So yeah,
That's Stina's book, yeah.
Yep, I don't think it's getting enough attention.
I agree.
I need to write my review for SF Signal.
I'm really, really liking it.
In fact, DiNardo and I were talking about that, Paul, and we're expecting it tomorrow.
it's really good. It's not getting enough attention, and it's definitely an epic fantasy, completely different feel and style and tone and everything than her previous books. Totally worth checking out.
Awesome.
I don't know. I'm so tired. I'm drawing a blank.
That's okay. You want to just stop at three?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
All right, Jeff, how about you?
Number one, last couple months in doing bits and bits of research, I sort of rediscovered Pamela Sargent, both the anthology she edited and her novels and her collections of short stuff. And I pretty much reread the entire Pamela Sargent
Nice.
Output. And it's probably the first time that I've actually gone back and done a little rediscovery of an author that I remembered almost every single story fairly well. And just came to my mind. Everyone should go back and read all of Pamela Sargent's stuff.
They're rebranding some of her stuff as YA-ish.
Yeah, I noticed that. And I can understand that.
I see it because I mean, when I read it, I didn't think of it as YA because YA wasn't really a thing. But yeah, in retrospect, yeah, that makes sense.
There's been a little spate of these I've been noticing come up. A couple of years ago, I did a whole like search for my favorite like 80s and 90s sci-fi and fantasy in ebook form, just because I wanted to support the authors and rebuy for when I was making the switch. And there wasn't a lot. And now it seems just in the past like 6 months, a bunch of people, like I noticed Patricia Reedy's stuff, her Lyra stuff is now available, her fantasy. Yeah. And the Mage Worlds trilogy, who is that?
Isn't that Deborah Doyle and James McDonald?
Doyle, yes, and McDonald, yeah. And that's now available, including a companion new little baby short that's in that world and stuff. So just for everybody out there, it's really worth your old favorites going hunting and packing about and seeing if they've made their stuff available.
Yeah, I'm waiting for David Chow's horror stuff to get recollected at some point and released.
There are still some holdouts.
There are.
Yeah, there are holes.
Yeah, Servant of the Empire series is still not available, and I am waiting. Yeah. That one I still carry around when I travel, because for some reason it's my travel trilogy.
Aw.
Providence, the comic by Alan Moore and Jason Barrows, which is the follow-up to his rather traumatic previous Lovecraft-type series. This one's 12 issues. Apparently the art's already done. 4 issues are out. A reporter is basically walking around New England and interviewing all these various characters from Lovecraft stories before the point that their stories take place that Lovecraft told. Really, really creepy, really ominous, pretty good. We'll probably do a Horseman episode on it once all the 12 episodes are wrapped. And I'm only going to give you 3. And the third one is going to be, I want to talk about the Science Fiction Hall of Fame for a second. I've met a couple people who are involved in this thing here in the D.C. area. And they've had a few exhibits of art at some museums. They had one at one of the airports at a BWI. And John may remember I actually tried to do a pretty lengthy interview with somebody from them a while back, and they were not exactly forthcoming. And I think one of the things that's really going on is that while I think their intentions are noble, I really think they're uncertain how to engage fandom about this. And I don't think it's so much that they're trying to make it bigger for a more wider and popular audience, but I think that, quite frankly, they don't have the knowledge required to really try to engage fandom. I mean, when I was at World Fantasy last year, they had a poster. That was it. That was the extent of their presence in DC, which is where they all are. And it was a nice poster. It was a big poster on a nice big, you know, convention frame. But they really need to be getting the word out. So if anybody comes across anything regarding the Science Fiction Hall of Fame, really try to engage them and see, you know, try to get them to expand their presence, because, you know, they're working on getting a physical space here in the D.C. area, and they've got, you know, significant resources, and they've got the means to do it. And like I said, their mission is an admirable one. I just kind of think they're talking to the wrong people.
Interesting. Okay.
Marketing. Marketing.
Marketing, marketing, marketing. That's what I do. Hey, Paul, do you know what the score of a perfect game in bowling adds up to?
300.
That is correct.
And my average all-time bowling score is 1/5 of that.
Wow.
I am one of the worst bowlers ever. Yeah.
Me too.
If I get to 100, that's a total victory for me, but usually, yeah, 50, 60, yeah, because I am horribly uncoordinated. But none of you, I'm on a podcast. Oh, yeah, Gail knows I'm horribly uncoordinated. She's seen me trip and stumble around WorldCon.
It's true.
Well, I used to bowl with Nana Graysmick, who put on one of the first Star Trek conventions ever.
Nice.
And so she used to tell me all kinds of great stories. Did you know that the New York Review of Science Fiction published their 300th issue in August of 2013?
Nice.
That's kind of cool.
Once again, that late?
Yeah. What? Gail, did you have five or three or two things you want to talk about? Go for it.
I can blow through these pretty quickly, and some of them are going to be podcasts, so suck it up, Patrick. I recently discovered Anomaly Podcast, which is a group of lady dorks and geeks talking about genre, and they recently did Star Trek The Next Generation episode called Lower Decks, which is one of my personal favorites, and it made me very nostalgic, and I went back and watched it, and I am happy with any podcast that makes me nostalgic. So, and then companion to that is another one called Dork Forest Podcast. That's not exactly genre. It's Jackie Chasen, who is a stand-up comic, but she has genre people. She has comics who talk about their dorkdoms, which often turn out to be genre. So it's just kind of fun. It's sort of a different outsider perspective. I know we don't always the podcast streams don't always mix.
Sometimes so they do.
The next thing I wanted to talk about is Y'all Fest in Charleston, South Carolina. If any of the listeners are out there, it's a like a big book fair festival that is mostly open to the public for free. So come, bring your kids. There's a bunch of genre authors going to be there. I think Brandon Sanderson is giving the keynote. So that should be really fun. It just sort of takes place in the downtown area between various different hotels and bars and pubs and things.
When is that?
That's in November, the second or third weekend of November. It's YALL, as in Y'all.
Yeah, y'all.
Make sense? Yeah, very, very twee, but there it is.
A warning to anybody traveling to Charleston is that there is never any place to park.
Well, good to know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a gorgeous area, but yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully downtown's walkable that time of year. But
it's very walkable.
Yeah, it should be.
The next thing I'm going to give a shout out to is not exactly genre, but it's another period, which is my obsession. It's a Comedy Central program, but you can also see it, I think, perfectly legally on YouTube. It's just hilarious mockery of high society at the turn of the century in Boston, but it's really crass and very crude, and I'm totally in love with it. Then I have recently joined my local RWA chapter, and it's my new favorite thing. So shushla.
I just went to the Colorado Romance Writers meeting. They invited me to come up there and talk to them about marketing and podcasts. So
they are so cool.
They are. And I look at it from someone who's trying to be published. I look at them and it's incredibly intimidating how put together they are.
They are. And they're at like the forefront of this kind of self-publishing and always been and becoming hybrid authors and all that sort of thing.
There's no. What's the word I'm looking for? Gosh, if only I were a writer and can think of a good word. There's no stigma attached to self-publishing
Not in that world, no. And there's, for me, at least every chapter is slightly different, but they're just super, my local chapter is really supportive and really engaged and really energized and big. There's a lot of mostly women members.
I was the only guy at the meeting.
And it was just a nice kind of change, I guess, energy-wise and emotionally-wise for me from, you know, the normal presence at say, a Worldcon, shall we say. So if you are interested in delving into romance as a writer, or if your books cross over into romance, if you've been reviewed in, like, RT or anything like that, I'd recommend going and checking your local chapter out. Most chapters will let you drop in at least three times. You might have to pay a little bit for the speaker, but you can drop in and check out what the local chapter is like, and if you like them, and it's just a anyway, I was sort of just, I've been kind of abandoned by all of my local writer friends. Not intentionally. They've just all moved because of the cost of living here is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was just sort of hunting for a new community, and I was really delighted to find it in RWA. So.
Well, and I've talked about it a little bit, and I don't remember where I talked about it at this point, because that's part of the problem with doing 300 freaking podcast episodes here and another 250 somewhere else. But I was talking about it was a lot of fun, number one, to see how they run things.
Yeah, and they're totally different. Joined the website. It's very different from Cephwa. The engagement, the way the paywalls are set up, everything is very different.
I learned about PAL and PAN.
Exactly.
Which just doesn't mean anything to anybody else, but Gail understands what I'm talking about. And I do,
and I think Cepha would be wise to institute something similar, but that's a different conversation.
And it was interesting because they started the meeting out with a lady who had just published a book, and so she comes up to the front of the room, and I and the other guest speakers are sitting at this table, so she's standing in front of us with her back to us, and she is talking about her book, and she published it herself, and she did the cover and everything, and she's you know, telling everybody how she has learned how to do covers. In the beginning, her covers weren't that great, but now she's learned how to do them and she's doing a lot better. And, you know, in the beginning, she would just have random images, and now she has, you know, big muscly guys in kilts on the cover. And who doesn't love big muscly guys in kilts on the book cover? I slowly raised my hand and the room erupted in laughter. And she's sitting there, and she's like, look at, like, what? And someone pointed at me, and she turned, and she looked at me. She's like, well, yeah, it's not for you. But it was interesting and kind of scary. I mean, they have marketing plans. They have business plans. They have plans for each book when it launches. They know they're going to do these 10 things. And they do things like, if they're going to launch a book that's about werewolves, and werewolves having sex or however it goes, and someone at Harlequin is also launching a book about that, they will wait and launch their book on the same day so that they can kind of ride that train.
Yeah, they're it's a smart community of engaged authors who are also marketing savvy, or if not already marketing savvy, trying to be. And yeah, it's a really fun local community. So if you feel like you might have any connection to it, I would just recommend checking them out.
The only other thing I'll say is that I did go to a genre literary convention kind of thing one time where I was asked to come and talk about podcasting. And probably four people showed up to the podcasting thing. No one cared anything about it or why they should be doing it. They specifically wanted me to talk about podcasting. I thought it was going to be the same thing. No, I was surrounded by these romance writers who wanted to know every minute detail about how to do podcasting themselves, how to get on podcasts, how to do interviews, what kind of equipment should they have. I mean, they had more questions than anybody has ever asked me about podcasting ever. That's how together they are. It's scary. Did you guys know that Batman number 300 was published by DC Comics in June of 1978?
Yep.
There you go. There's an older one for you there, Jeff. So hopefully that makes you feel better. Paul, you had a 300?
Hey, wait. Hang on.
John, remind me.
What was that issue?
Number 300.
Do you know what the issue was?
It was an alternate reality Batman where he's hanging up the cape and cowl, and he's going to like run for governor or something, and he's going to ask someone to marry him and all that kind of stuff.
Ringing a bell. I'm going to have to go internet search this. Okay, sorry.
That's okay.
That was after Neil Adams, I believe.
Mm. Yep. Paul?
Yeah, the SFF Audio podcast has hit episode 300 in January of this year. That was Brave New. That episode was Brave New World. I was on that episode, actually.
That's awesome. Congratulations to them.
Yep, they're up to in the 330s at this point.
So we're starting to run over here on time, so I want to get through a couple things here real quick. Anything at all you want to mention? Your free-for-all moment, Jeff?
No, the Hall of Fame was pretty much it.
So. Okay. Sarah?
No.
John?
I'm good.
No.
Gail?
Sure. I'm going to give a shout out to my boys, Sam Sykes, Mike Cole, and Wesley Chu on Twitter, because when the three of them are just tweeting back and forth to each other, it's just about my favorite thing in the entire universe.
God, they're hilarious.
I love them so much. So
I actually have
they kind of like every time I get on Twitter, I'm like, this is why I get on Twitter, is because they're just being complete idiots and it makes me so happy.
I actually have a message for you, Gail, from Sam Sykes.
Oh, no.
Buy his book?
Hold on. I've got it right here. Yeah, it says buy his book. Paul, did you have a free-for-all moment that you wanted to take?
I just want to thank you, Patrick, because you you brought me on the SS Single podcast back in episode 43.
Wow.
That was my first SS Single podcast. It was on Doctor Who, of all things.
Doctor Who.
And you,
hey,
you,
a Doctor Who. Doctor Who. Hey, a Doctor Who. Okay.
You got me into podcasting. You got me to bring my microphone. You got me to start doing this stuff. Which led into me being on stuff like, say, the Functional Nerds or SSF Audio or Skippy and Fanti or any of the other podcasts I've popped up on. So I thank you, Patrick.
You
broke my podcast virginity.
And it sounds like I'm going to steal Jen here soon.
Uh oh.
She's moving like two blocks away from me.
Yeah, she's moving to California. She's delighted to move out of California. So
who isn't, except for Gail?
Oh, poor Gail.
That's why Gail is losing her writer communities, because it is kind of expensive to live in California.
It's ridiculous.
It is, yeah. I do have to say that I know I don't talk about politics or religion for the most part, but I thought the most ridiculous moment in the most latest recent free-for-all political debate thing, whatever that they did at the Reagan Library, was one of the candidates says, yeah, and I know in California you're in a drought, so I brought my own water. Really?
Yeah.
I can tell you
even I wouldn't make that
the most ridiculous thing that happened.
But Jeff,
you're breaking your own rule, Patrick.
Even I wouldn't make that pun. And that's saying
yes,
something.
Yes, you would.
Because I did the goosebumps thing. All right. Well, Paul, that was very kind of you to say. And I'm glad that you have just spread your wings and expanded out and done all this other stuff.
But this was I don't forget my first. And so when you said you wanted me on the 300th episode, I said, damn, yes.
That's cool. And don't think that gets you out of writing your review tomorrow. So the last thing that I had on here, before I actually get to that, I'll say that Daredevil 300 was published by Marvel Comics in January of 1992. Which was kind of a cool episode. Kingpin was on the cover. And DC Comics published Sergeant Rock, I think, Our Army at War number 300 in January of 77.
Remember that.
Wow.
Figured you would. Does anybody have a favorite moment of the SF Signal podcast that they would like to share, Sarah?
I was just thrilled that you asked me to be on it the first time. So that's my moment. I always wanted the podcast, and then you sent me an email and here I am annoying everybody. So
does that mean you forgive me for threatening to come to your house and bring your children Mountain Dew?
You know, my baby had a 3-diaper poop explosion last night.
Yeah.
And the trash man doesn't come till tomorrow morning. So I dare you to do that tonight. Come on, dude. I've got my ammo locked and loaded, and it's been festering for a night.
Nice. Speaking of, John, did you have a...
Yeah, I do. So besides the pre and post podcast recording banter, which I love...
Yeah, that I don't record anymore.
A lot of folks don't run this, although the regular listeners and even the irregular ones know the whole running gag of mentioning bagels on the podcast. And the whole reason that's done... is essentially to bring me off mute, because on most panels I'm listening in the background, and I let the podcasters have their fun, and I'm just kind of listening, a non-participant. But what Patrick does is, before the podcast starts, he says, you know, bonus points to anyone who can bring DiNardo off mute by mentioning bagels. So, you know, throughout the podcast people will mention bagels, and he never broke me until one time he said something, And when he did, let me back up a little bit. At the end of every podcast, even when Patrick says his goodbye, I come off mute and I go, end scene. And that's where, you know, he knows to stop recording, the whole bit. So this night where he actually got me to come off of mute, or rather he was trying to get me to come off of mute, it didn't work. But at the end of the podcast, I said, end scene, you bastard. And ever since then, that became one of the closing audio snippets on the podcast, much to my surprise. So yeah. that was a nice little bonus extra for nobody but me, but now everybody can share in the.
Well, I used to back before when I was still young and stupid, I would record everything. It's like as soon as the call started, I hit record, and then I would have to do tons of extra editing because I would have to figure out, you know, I'd have to make my timestamps, figure out where it actually started, and then when it actually stopped, and get rid of all the extra crap. And now I don't do that. I just, you know, I hit record, I mark my timestamp, and I go. And then as soon as we're done, I hit stop. But that used to give me tons of extra little snippets like John's talking about that I would play with. And I kind of miss that a little bit. I don't know, John. I miss it. That's how I've caught some great audio in the past.
Yes, that's how we built his blackmail drive.
Jeff, did you have a favorite moment?
Yeah, I'm not certain if it was the podcast, but I'm pretty certain it was with you. Was I on you? Was I with you when you interviewed Kevin J. Anderson?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Maybe because we did the prog rock thing over on Functional Nerds.
No. This was with him.
We had the prog rock guy because they were doing the prog rock album for the book that he was writing.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That was it. Yeah. Okay. And it was, I think Andrew was on it as well.
That's entirely possible, man.
Yeah. And he opened by telling us that, he was on his way to Dubai for some big international publishing thing. And he had just found out 2 days before that the Sultan was a big fan of his. So the Sultan wanted him and his wife to come to the palace. And all you heard was his wife in the background screaming because she had nothing to wear to the Sultan's palace.
Well, if that was Kevin J. Anderson, then you're talking about Rebecca.
Yeah.
Who is they do Wordfire Press together.
Yep. Yep.
So Jeff, your favorite SF Signal podcast memory was a Functional Nerd podcast memory?
Actually, no. Since that's the one that always comes back to my mind, and it's a me moment, because it was probably the moment that made Patrick laugh the most, and Derek was on as well when it happened, and I got in such trouble for it, but I own up to the trouble. It was me and Derek and several female authors. I forget who they were, or one editor and two authors, I believe. And the discussion turned to the fact that teenage boys had difficulty reading genre stories with female protagonists. And when Patrick got around to me about 10 minutes later, I said, well, ladies, I have to disagree with you, because when I was 15, I read nothing but letters to Penthouse, and they always had a female protagonist. And I got so much hate mail for that, and it was well-deserved. And I own
up.
And
you brought it back?
However, it made Patrick laugh harder than I.
Oh my goodness!
Could actually hear a million eyes roll. So
yeah, I would imagine it's like, I don't know, Quantum Thief.
Hey Patrick, what about yours? Were there any I don't know, memorably awkward interviews you gave?
That's called leading the witness, John.
Oh, whatever, whatevs.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I do. So I have a couple of favorite moments. But before I get to them, I want to ask Gail.
I guess my favorite moment / memory was screaming at you guys in my car in my iPod. I can't remember what you were talking about.
That's when it might have been the voicemail line.
Yeah. I remember just screaming at you, and I was like, okay, fine, I have to figure out this voicemail thing. And then I called you up, and I think I might have been the only person to ever call you.
Pretty much.
And I called you a couple of times. And then finally, I think I called you, and I was just like, Patrick, you just have to make this a panel thing. Like, this is ridiculous. Yeah, so that's my favorite memory.
Gail did use the voicemail line more than anyone else, because essentially what would happen is we would have a podcast, and then I would wait, and it was kind of like, whenever you do a blog post, you know, if you wait roughly 1 to 7 hours, you're going to get a comment from Paul. And as soon as a podcast would go out, I would get a voicemail from Gail. You're wrong. You are so wrong. I can't believe I was yelling at you guys. Ah. And then eventually she did leave the wood. It's like, I can't take this anymore. I need to be on.
Yeah.
So that was great. Paul, did you have a favorite moment?
It was like the second time that Sarah was on. And she casually mentioned how many books she was reading. And it was double mine. And I was thinking, oh my God.
I was wondering when you were going to mention something like that.
It's like, oh my God. I think I said, like, holy crap. I might have cursed. I may have had to bleep it out because I was just gobsmacked. Like, I am way out of my league with you, Sarah.
How many have you read this year, Paul?
Including audiobooks? I'm at 90 for the year, including audiobooks.
You're doing good.
Yeah.
Wow, you said that with no condensation, whatever. Well, what's the word?
What are you at? What, 150?
I'm at 145.
145. Oh, only 145.
145. But I'm almost done with two. So it'll be 147 probably by Friday.
So you're moving on, trying to lap me here. Yeah. I'm doing good. Yeah.
I was actually going to say that the only reason.
I have a problem. I can't help it.
The only reason Sarah actually agreed to be on the podcast tonight was because it was a way to con her husband into giving her enough time to read. She's like, no, honey, you have to watch the kids because I have to be on the podcast. Flipping through the book.
Oh, that was the main reason when we started having guests on Horsemen. That was one of the main reasons we want to have her on. I said, well, we need to have people on that have read more than you've read. So,
so to answer John's question, there's actually a couple of favorite moments that I've had. One of my favorite moments for people, and you wouldn't be able to find this on iTunes. You would have to actually go back on sfsignal.com because we do limit the number of podcasts that appear in the feed that hits iTunes. But if you went back to the beginning when it wasn't very good, you will find John and Elio in several episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And one of my favorite moments was when I got an email from John who's like, yeah, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. It's just too much. Functional Nerds and SF Signal, it's just too much. And then he just never came on again. And it was just hilarious because it's very John. It's very Anelio. But he was part of the podcast very early on. To answer the other John's question, because I do have two Johns, which is a completely different story. I know exactly what he's talking about. Early on, I didn't know how to schedule people. I didn't know how to find people. I didn't know what to do. So I was relying quite a bit on people who would send John emails saying that they wanted to be interviewed. And I had on, what was his name, John? He did a bunch of TV shows.
Graham Hancock.
He did a bunch of TV shows and books and stuff. He wrote a book called Footprints of the Gods.
Oh no! Oh yeah!
And he was Ancient Aliens before Giorgio. But he wrote a science fiction novel, and the whole gist of it was that he had written this novel because everybody was accusing him of writing science fiction with his theories about ancient aliens and civilizations and all this kind of stuff. That he decided just to embrace it and actually write a science fiction novel and see how it went. So, I agreed to do a podcast with him. And I had to call him in a hotel in New York. And I remember there was a big mix-up, and he wasn't answering the phone. And I had to keep calling. Finally, he answers the phone. And he's like, no, I need 5 more minutes or something. Okay, whatever. Finally, I get him on. And at that time, I was doing, like, standard interview questions, right? And so one of the questions is, how did you come up with the idea for this book?
Oh.
So I ask him, how did you come up with the idea for this book? And he says, well, in my travels and in my research into aliens and ancient civilizations and blah, 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 you can go back and find this episode as well. I would travel to the Amazon quite often, and I got to be well known by the tribes there, and the shaman respected me and trusted me. And so on one of my trips, you know, they shared their shamanistic peyote with me, and I got high, and the universe opened up to me and gave me the idea for this story.
Oh, dear.
And I'm just sitting there staring. And then awkward. He goes on. And then he goes on. He's like, and of course, you know, I didn't get the full story, so I had to go back several times and do more drugs with the shaman of the tribes. And every time I did, the universe gave me just a little bit more of the story. And a little bit more, a little bit more, until I finally had the entire story and was able to write it down. And I believe I was recording on the iMac, which I'm recording on now at the time, but I had the laptop. And so as I'm recording, I'm on the laptop typing an email to John. John, 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 you have to listen to this episode when I'm done. You have to tell me if we could publish this or not. Because I just thought it was the craziest thing ever. It was so weird and awkward. And I just remember John laughing at me and finally going, well, yeah, you know, gosh, I just post it. What else are you going to do? Post it. So we did.
Wow. It's fun, if only to like listen. I mean, you can practically feel Patrick's discomfort. The awkwardness oozes through the headset.
Episode 17. I had to go searching for it. There it is. Episode 17, November 29th, 2010.
Yep. That was fun. That was different.
Is that out on ebook?
You mean is his book out as an ebook? I have no idea.
Oh, I hope so.
No idea. No idea whatsoever. But
I'm trying to find out.
Well, if it was, it'd be linked because we did that. We used to link to the book. We still do. You just click the link, Paul.
Oh, I thought it might have came out since.
No, I don't know.
Ooh, I have another one real quick. You had me on an episode about audiobooks, and it was when I hated audiobooks, and now I listen to audiobooks religiously all the time. You have completely transformed my book absorption experience.
I was on that episode.
Yep.
So was I. We were exhorting you about the goodness of audiobooks. And
I went on and I wanted you guys to get me addicted to audiobooks because it's perfect for work. And it is perfect for work. And that's why I don't go insane while I'm at work and kill people. Because I listen to audiobooks and you guys have saved lives. So there you go.
Sarah, I really, really hope at some point in the future an author is going to ask you to write a blurb for their book that basically says, this book prevented me from killing people. I really want to see that as your first blurb.
So, Sarah, just to throw it out there, right now, I am listening to Diving the Wreck.
Oh, yeah.
Rush. Yeah.
Such a good book. Christine Catherine Rush.
That's a great audiobook, too.
Love the narrator. Love it, love it, love it, love it. Love her. She's a wonderful narrator.
Hey, next Patrick, up, when you get done with that book and tell me how awesome it is, I'll just go look up the review I did now.
And the next book up in my queue, audio wise, is narrated by Ron Perlman.
Ooh.
Oh, which one's that?
The Strain.
Oh, nice.
I didn't know that he had done that, and they had it on sale on Audible, so I went ahead and grabbed it. But yeah, it's Ron Perlman.
I think there are a total of 4 Diving the Wreck audiobooks out right now.
There probably is. This is the very first one.
Yeah,
this is the first one.
I know they did a paste-up of a bunch of the novellas she had in Asimov.
Well, the narrator is wonderful.
Yeah, and I'm drawing a blank on her name, too.
Jennifer Van Dyke.
Yes, Jennifer Van Dyke.
She's pretty awesome. So that's the next one for me, Sarah, just to kind of throw it out there. If you're interested. So I noticed that I was definitely listening to the same kinds of books over and over again because I was loving The Expanse so much. I kept listening to space opera. And so this is the Diving the Wreck one is kind of like the last one. I'm going to take a break for a little while. And that's why I decided to look for something else. And then when I saw that Ron Perlman had narrated a book, who doesn't want that voice in your ear? You know,
that's cool.
I love the way, I love the way she narrates the words stealth tech. She has to enunciate it because you can read it real quick, but it's not something you can say in an audiobook. and make it not sound like one made up word. So.
It's like that time my cousin was working at the KOA that his parents owned, and there was a storm coming in, and they had rented a tent site at the KOA, and he was worried that the people, that all their stuff was going to wash away. So he'd asked his mom, you know, where are the people who rented the tent site? And she said, well, they're out there by the pool. So he walked out to this lady who was sitting there, and her son and her husband are in the pool swimming around. He walks up to this lady and he says, excuse me, are you in tents?
I'll do you one better real quick. I knew a girl who never heard what you said properly, and a bunch of us decided we were going to go down to New Rochelle to see a band. And yeah, we're gonna take the train down to New Rochelle. And she kept saying, what are you talking about? And we're like, what? She goes, what is that, a brain case? And I go, what? She goes, a brain case? And finally we realized she thought we meant, she thought we said Neuro Shell.
That sounds very Ghost in the Shell-esque.
Wow. That's like that time I said pizza and Paul thought I meant from New York.
Oh, no. The one true pizza.
Where they don't cut it into squares. It's weird.
I cannot understand why they cut it into squares around here.
That's okay. Look, here's the thing. In New York, they make the giant slices full of grease.
Yeah.
In Chicago, they make the giant thick slices, right? That weigh a ton. In California, where Gail lives, they put fruit on the pizza.
I know. I lived in California for 8 months, Patrick. I know.
I remember when we moved.
Wait. Excuse me, Mom. Yeah, my state pineapple. Is extremely large, yeah. First of all. So huh? You cannot excuse the entirety of California just on the basis of whatever small podunk town you happen to eat a fruit-based pizza.
Pineapple. They put pineapple on pizza.
Suddenly, Gail is incited to anger just because of the mention of pizza.
She's just upset because I'm saving a cold brew Lipton iced tea for next year's World Cup for her.
Oh, no.
I would say you need to come out here and I will introduce you to the joy that is Zachary's, but for a man who drinks iced tea that is sweetened, your palate is blown anyway, so you can't be respected or even thought to judge any food with any sort of sense whatsoever.
Especially bear claws, just saying.
So now we've entered the pick on Patrick portion of the show.
Oh, of course. That's what we've been waiting
You've
for.
Trained us well.
I have.
It's 300. The gloves are off now, buddy.
Yep.
And you picked people who knew you well. What else did you expect?
I did. No, that's fine. So you know what? We've actually been talking for an hour and a half. Should we stop?
That's probably a good idea at this juncture.
I think so. So I want to thank everybody for coming on. This has been a very special episode of SF Signal because it was the 300th. And who knows if we'll, you know, go another 300 or if John will just say, you're done and cut us off forever.
He has the power.
He does. Thanks, everybody, for coming on.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you. Thanks for 300 episodes.
Yay. 300. And scene.
Thank you for listening to the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. Your host is Patrick Hester, an author, a blogger, and a functional nerd. His website is www.atfmb.com, which stands for All Things From My Brain. ATFMB is also his Twitter handle and where you can find him on Facebook. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the links to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends and have them tell their friends, and so on, and so on. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all of your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melds featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SF&F field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, fiction deals, movie reviews, videos, links and roundup posts, and more. Click the RSS button in the sidebar of your browser to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
It's like talking to a child.
Magic wooey.
Wah, wah. Thinking and crap.
I don't even know what the horseman is.
And scene, you bastard.